I'm Lisa with Enable. We are coming to a city near you. We are on the road for our 2024 road shows. Come learn about Enable, our products, what we have to offer, and network with some IT professionals in your area. We hope to see you there. Register today, and we'll see you soon.
And that's when he looked at me and said, I'm going to make you the CEO and go do what you got to do. And I was a little like, you know, I'm not a CEO. I'm a salesperson. I don't have any finance background or any advanced MBA degrees or anything. He's like, you'll be great. So at that point, I kind of said to the company, look, we haven't grown much in 5 years. We are now a sales-driven organization.
Welcome to Now That's It, Stories of MSP Success, where we dive into the journeys of some of the trailblazers in our industry to find out how they used their passion for technology to help turn managed services into the thriving sector it is today.
Doug Alexander, current board member, former CEO, majority owner of Focus Technology, New England's preferred partner for managed service technology services in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to the Now That's It podcast, Doug. So as the saying goes, once a salesperson, always a salesperson. Does that describe you, Doug?
I'd say for sure. I started out in 1995 as an inside sales rep, smiling and dialing, trying to get appointments for outside salespeople, really out of lack of direction, honestly. Thought I wanted to be a lawyer, went to work for a law firm and quickly realized that's not what I wanted to do. Got a break and got hired into a startup company that was a reseller of data storage and made their own NFS file server.
Wow.
I worked there for probably 3 weeks. Maybe a month, and still had no idea what the company did, but learned a lot and the career went on from there.
That's great. What is it about sales that really drives you, Doug?
You know, you really got to love to compete and love to win. For me, it was, you know, obviously the compensation is there, but it's only as good as you are and you get paid on performance. So a lot of betting on yourself, believing in yourself, commitment, hard work. And then the community and the people you're around, we can get into it, but I spent a lot of time with a lot of great people on the OEM manufacturing side before I got to Focus, made some great relationships. The customers were just awesome. And it was a fun job, very hard, very, very hard, but very, very fun and rewarding, and loved getting paid on performance. You know, you're betting on yourself, your teammates, and you're out there competing and winning. You know, I played sports my whole life growing up. I just loved competing, and it was kind of a natural fit.
We've had this conversation. I think it takes a special person to be a salesperson, definitely a successful salesperson. You know, you can have a great personality, strike up conversation, but to your point, like you said, you've got to be able to bet on yourself, because if you don't succeed, you're going to not do well, right? You're going to be poor. So you really got to be able to make that bet to say, I'm confident I can hit my number and exceed it. And you got to be pretty almost entrepreneurial, right? As a salesperson.
I mean, you're kind of running your own business, sort of.
Yeah.
You got a lot of support from the company that you work with and work for and the people around you. But many nights driving home, you're wondering, what am I doing?
Right.
And then it is really highs and lows. So you miss your number, you have a bad month, you're just scratching your head. Why am I doing this? And then the next day you wake up and you get an order and you're like, this is the greatest job ever. So very much a roller coaster, but lots of fun. And then you could really put a lot into it and get a lot out of it, you know, driving yourself to just be better.
Yeah.
So it's great.
We'll talk more about it. Not only a great salesperson, but I think you're a great leader. And I think what you've built around you to sort of, you know, follow in your footsteps is pretty powerful.
One thing someone once said this to me, it really stuck with me.
Yeah.
And it was when I was in the beginning of my sales career. They said, you know, you're not really in sales until you have an existing customer base that buys something from you every quarter, quarter in and quarter out. You've got great relationships and you don't ever have a lull.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of sales roles out there that are called sales roles. You know, when you're trying to develop relationships and do business development stuff and get meetings, but until you, as a salesperson, until you have a sales territory, a quota that you're hitting on a regular basis, a customer following that relies on you to help them, and team members around you that are helping you. You know, I sold technology my whole life, but I'm not a technologist, don't have an engineering degree, but I was surrounded by great people. But that really stuck with me. And I could tell, like, when I hit that, I'm like, all right, I'm in sales now. Yep. So I think there's a lot of folks that give up on it a little too early. And they say, I tried sales, but they never really were in sales because they never got to that point.
That's great. So you were in sales early on, but early 2000s, you get a job at the EMC Corporation where you had a chance to learn sales the EMC way.
Yeah.
You talk a little bit about what that was like?
You know, I got there late. So I competed with EMC for a good chunk of my career. You know, the 90s were an incredible time for EMC. I think their stock split 6 times during the 90s. I grew up in Boston. EMC obviously headquartered in Hopkinton. I was right in their backyard. I worked for a company called Storage Tech that was reselling Clarion from Digital Equipment. Mm-hmm. And we were competing with EMC. We lost way more than we won. But when we won, it was great.
Yeah.
I'll never forget this. I just closed a really big deal with a big company in Boston, and we unseated EMC. We were swapping them out. And it was maybe 2 or 3 days later, and I'm driving to work, and I hear on the radio that EMC just bought the Clarion, basically, yeah. which is what we yeah. sold. And I just closed the deal like three days ago. So the CIO calls me up. He's like, hey, Doug, sure you heard the bad news. EMC just bought your product. What are we going to do about this? I want to go back to EMC. Yeah. And I actually had to call the EMC team that I was competing against. And I'm like, I need help. What are we going to do here? And that's when I'm like, all right, I need to go work for EMC. Yeah. This is not going to get any better.
That's great. So when you were working at EMC, did that help you break sort of any of those maybe bad sales habits that were sort of self-taught early on? Or was it just a different process, a different method for selling?
There was a definite higher level of accountability. It was great cult. I want to say a great culture.
Yeah.
Of course, it had its bad moments, sure. but I learned so much there. The people there were just the best in the business. And we won a lot of deals that technology-wise, we probably shouldn't have won. And certainly price-wise. But customers, and this was just an EMC thing, they took such good care of their customers. And, you know, EMC used to tell us, you put the customer first, always, the company second, and yourself last. And if you do that and do it right, your stuff is going to be fine and well yeah. taken care of. And you first heard that and you're like, myself last? I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But then once you bought in, it just worked. So EMC took very, very good care of its customers, its employees. I was surrounded by just the best sales leaders in the business. And I just soaked it all in. I learned as much as I could. They drove you very hard. You know, we used to say we lived our days in 90-day cycles. You had to hit that quarterly number. A lot of reporting, a lot of tracking, a lot of metrics, a lot of accountability. They used to say, don't win alone, don't lose alone. Mm-hmm. So you bring in a lot of resources. They had tons of resources to help you sell. I had some great mentors and some great managers there that I learned a ton from. And it was awesome. That's I like great. To call it the gladiator training ground of sales.
Yeah.
It was just we're not going to lose. They used to say, you know, 100% of market share is our fair share. And we went at it hard and it was a great place.
I've heard some of the big tech giants like EMC and Cisco. There's a bunch of them out there that, again, sales was, they had built this training ground, as you mentioned, to really get your sales reps up to speed and producing very quickly. And so those that had sort of gone through one of those different tech giants, they come out going, yeah, I know things that others don't. I can read a room better.
Yeah.
I can forecast better.
Yeah.
I can hit my number and tell you I'm going to hit my number because I'm so confident.
The reading of the deals yeah. was so, you didn't really know what was happening to you,
yeah.
but forecasting and being able to predict. And, you know, we had a methodology that we followed. Mm-hmm. And if there was, you know, 10 points on the methodology, and you miss step 4 and 5, you could tell, you know, yeah. and you're like, why is this deal stalled? Why are they not moving forward? And you'd go back to that methodology and you'd see it right there in front of you. But it was hard at first to kind of grasp that because yeah. you're looking at a piece of paper and you're like 10 steps, like, you know, the customer's going to do what they're going to do, you know, right. but well, I didn't get to the right person. I'm selling in the back of the building or the front of the building instead of the back of the building. I don't have the right people at the table. You know, I'm not bringing in the right resources. I'm not telling the right reason to partner with EMC. You know, we used to say, if you're talking speeds and feeds, you're losing. EMC brought a lot to the table from not only a technology standpoint, but relationship standpoint, to me, they were always out in front of the technology. Mm-hmm. When cloud started, you know, coming around, our message was, we're going to take you on the journey to the cloud.
Yep.
We had no cloud offering, you know, but we're in front of customers talking about why this is going to be so important for you. And I think customers went with us because of the vision that EMC had, and we were always kind of out in front of it.
That's great.
Not the perfect place. You know, there was a lot of craziness going on, but the people made it, and the culture of just, you know, we will win and we will take very good care of our customers. I saw, you know, solutions that customers spent millions of dollars on go into the data center and for whatever reason, just not work. And, you know, EMC was right there. They'd swap it out. They'd ship in the new stuff. They'd add capacity. They'd do whatever it takes, you know, regardless of whether there was a PO or not. Very fast moving to fix problems. Mm-hmm. That was a big lesson I learned as well. Used to go into our quarterly business reviews and, you know, the bosses would come in and they'd say, you know, we're going to go through your problems that you're having in your district. But if I come back here for next quarter's QBR and they're the same problems, we're going to have a big problem. So fixing things fast, taking care of things quickly, moving very quickly was a big competitive advantage for us.
That's great. You had a really good run there. You were there for over a decade.
10 years.
Yeah. And then as many of my friends that went through EMC, they love their time there. But at some point, it's time for the next phase of your life.
Yeah.
What was that for you? What were you looking for? Was there an opportunity that came by that said it's time to leave the mothership there?
Yeah. So a lot of our business at the time went through channel partners. Mm-hmm. So I was basically selling in New England, upstate New York a little bit. I managed a district. I was an area manager for their backup solutions unit for a while. Mm-hmm. So everything went through the channel. So I got to know the owners of these local channel partners pretty well. And they were doing really well and being very successful. And it always just rattled around in the back of my head that I could probably do that. And I have always had this entrepreneurial itch. And I felt like I had done all the studying and it was time to take the test. Mm-hmm. So Focus Technologies was a small, really VAR in New Hampshire, of all places, and started in 1997 by Bruce Crochetier. Great, great guy. And he was on me for a number of years, tapping me on the shoulder and said, why don't you come over here and help me grow the company? And I was just having a lot of success at EMC. I loved the people I was working with. And I said no many times. Mm-hmm. And then in 2015, the rumblings of the Dell acquisition were brewing. I think they closed that deal or announced it in October of 2015. Kind of saw that. I'm like, if I'm ever going to take the test, now's the time.
Yep.
Our group that we had was starting to split up. My boss went to ServiceNow, and who I loved, Tom Hannigan, if you're out there, he was just the best. He now runs all the sales for the Americas for ServiceNow. He left, some other people left, and we started to kind of break up our group. And we knew the Dell thing was coming, and this was a good opportunity to kind of really test myself and take on a new challenge to go run sales for Focus.
That's great. So you come on board at Focus, and it is very much a VAR business, though.
Yes.
I think you said 98% hardware sales, 2% sort of services or whatever.
Yes.
So what, talk about Focus at the time. I mean, what was the business like, and what did you see? Obviously, you knew you could sell hardware. Mm-hmm. You had done it for years. So that's the easy button there. But what was sort of your early, you know, hope that you could help from a building the business?
Yeah, so there was a lot of things in place. So I had a good customer network. I had a great network of talent that I could pull from and try to recruit in. Focus had, you know, 300 customers, no debt, and was just a solid kind of foundation to get this started. I'm not knocking lifestyle businesses. Right. There's plenty of great lifestyle businesses out there. It was a lifestyle business.
Yep.
And by that, I mean, you know, people were just comfortable with little to no growth, but still doing well. People earning the income they wanted to earn, having the lifestyle they wanted to have. But the owner wanted more. And he hired me to turn it from a lifestyle business to a growth-oriented business. And so he initially hired me as the VP of sales. And to his credit, you know, he kind of said to me, I'm too close to the employees. I can't change the culture. I think just moving this thing is going to be too hard. I need to hire someone to do that for me. So I got in the seat as a VP of sales, started looking around. I'm like, this is really a lifestyle business.
Yeah.
Again, nothing wrong with lifestyle businesses,
sure.
But you know, after a while, I went to Bruce and I said, look, how bad do you really want to grow Focus? And he said, really bad. And I said, okay, well, what got us here isn't going to get us to the next step. We have to go through a full transformation, cultural transformation. We had to change everything we're doing. And people are not going to be happy about it. And the lifestyle people, again, not knocking the lifestyle people, but they're either going to check out or maybe not transform. But here's what we need to do. And that's when he looked at me and said, I'm going to make you the CEO and go do what you got to do. And I was a little like, you know, I'm not a CEO. I'm a salesperson. I don't have any finance background or any advanced MBA degrees or anything. He's like, you'll be great. So he got out of the way, let me do my thing. And we invested in growth. So at that point, I kind of said to the company, look, we haven't grown much in 5 years. I'm not a lifestyle person. Like, I've never just been in that environment. So everything has always been do better, do better, do better. You know, hit your number. Okay, go exceed your number. And that's just the way I've always looked at the world. So started looking around the company and knew that we had to make changes, but we couldn't break things either, right? So I couldn't come in and just blow everything up.
Yeah.
So as I'm kind of taking the company through that change, I was very sales driven. I'm like, look, we are now a sales driven organization. Nothing happens until something gets sold. We had great engineers, great support, but we needed people that could really take us up market. That was the big thing. So we were selling to SMBs, and we still do, and still a good business. Mm-hmm. But we got to go find bigger accounts that have bigger challenges, have bigger budget that we can add more value in. And that's what we're going to go do. So I started to hire in growth-oriented people that had done it before. And kind of, I had kind of a following of people that wanted to kind of do this. So I hired a bunch of people across the board. So we hired new salespeople. I hired a marketing people. Focus, again, it was really on cruise control. Mm-hmm. There was no marketing. There was no like advanced forecasting, P&L management. There was not a lot of strategy, and it was just kind of on cruise control.
Yeah.
So, you know, here I am walking around the company saying, we're going to grow. And I know there were the people that were just like, yeah, I'm out of here. I'm not going to, I don't want to hang around for this. And that was fine, you know, and they went on and did their thing. But I hired our CFO, Chris Caprio, who's now our CEO. I'll get into that. Mm. And that was a big turning point for us. We brought a lot more planning and strategic planning. You know, when I first sat in the seat, EMC always had the strategy and they just jammed it down your throat and they're like, go execute. And we were just an execution machine. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, where's the strategy? And I'm like, oh, I got to come up with that. So, and I relied on, you know, my training from EMC to go do that.
Yeah.
And then the people that I hired in. So we hired a CTO, a chief strategy officer, a marketing person, a bunch of new sales reps, a bunch of new engineers. And I wrote down our company values, our mission, and I put them on a spreadsheet and I said, everyone that we hire has to have these cultural traits. And you could see it when we made a hire that didn't match our values, they didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And that worked. So we hired in a bunch of just great people and we got after it. And it was just, look, you know, 8 to 10 sales calls a week per rep. No one had goals. It was just, you know, if they made enough money to support their income, they were fine. And we're like, no, we're going to have quotas. We're going to track metrics. We're going to really get after it and take very, very good care of our customers. And I had a lot of people that thought I was crazy. And they're like, this is never going to work. You're never going to do this.
They're betting against you, huh?
Yeah. I felt like there were some folks that were just kind of waiting me out and just kind of from the owner's perspective, oh, he'll get sick of Doug at some point. This will just be another phase of Focus. But it was real this time and we had a lot of success. So, but part of what you said, we were 98% VAR, very little services. We had a little bit of MSP, but it was losing customers and losing money fast. And no one was really looking at that, you know? So we had success on the VAR side that helped us have the capital to go invest in the growth side. And we looked at the MSP piece and, you know, I have a knack for stating the obvious, but we looked at it and we're like, wow, this is good business, right? And and we started to put a strategy together to grow the MSP business and we got to work on that. And I didn't come from the MSP world, but I knew like, this is real. I don't want to ever say selling anything is easy, but this is easier than selling $8 million of Symmetrics into a data center. You can get to the decision makers quicker. They really have a need. You can bring a lot of value. So we started putting effort into that. And our goal was to get to 50-50 in a short amount of time, services to MSP. And we just tracked it like maniacs. Like, yeah. I had it on my whiteboard. And I'm like, okay, we're at, 98-2. Now we're at 80-20. Now we're at 70-30. And we just kept moving that needle. And then the customers saw our focus there, no pun intended. And they're like, these guys are serious about delivering a good MSP product. Mm-hmm. And then everyone inside the company, most of them hardware sales folks, showed them how to sell MSP and why it was valuable, started partnering in that area, and it took off. It went great.
Awesome.
And that's when Chris Caprio, our CFO, mm-hmm. came to me and said, we should make an acquisition. And we weren't a rich company. We had an owner that didn't have access to capital, right? So we weren't backed by private equity or anything. But Chris is like, I think we can make a pretty good MSP acquisition. So we did. We found a company in Boston called NSK. We acquired them in 2018. We only could afford what we could afford, but we took on some debt. And this was a gutsy move, again, by the owner, right? So the owner, personally guaranteed the debt, really believed in us. Now, he saw the performance, right? He saw the transformation happening. He saw mm-hmm. the growth taking place. And to his credit, he really believed in us. And we said, we want to go buy this company and you need to personally guarantee the loan for it. And he just stepped right up, signed wow. the documents. And so we integrated them. It went extremely well. And, we went from 800K of annual recurring revenue to 15 million in 5 years. And that acquisition was a big turning point for us. And a lot of the people that were part of that acquisition are still at Focus. They've grown their careers. We've grown our customer base, our MRR, really just kind of applying those EMC sales principles to mm-hmm. the MSP business. Not forgetting about the VAR stuff and the data infrastructure stuff and the cloud stuff, if you will, still doing well in that area. But this drove the enterprise value of Focus in a big way.
Wow. There's so much there, so much good stuff there, Doug. Let me ask you today, what's the revenue mix VAR to MSP business?
Yeah, so it's close to 50-50. Awesome. It's not quite there, but it's almost there.
Yeah.
And the margins have gone up dramatically as well. Because as we were investing, we're hiring people that could deliver. We're tweaking the MSP offering. Mm-hmm. So that took some investment.
Yep.
But we had an earnout on the acquisition that we did. We hit all those earnout numbers. Chris reminds me, he's like, we got spoiled with that acquisition because we found them relatively easily,
yep.
negotiated a good deal, closed it relatively quickly, integrated it really well, kept all the employees, kept all the customers, increased the margins. And, Chris had done about 12 acquisitions before that. And he said, these things usually don't go like this.
They don't.
But I think that was good execution and good yep. strategy on our part and putting that customer first. We started to really look at what we called bad MRR. And we had some customers that were sucking a lot of our time, not paying a lot per month. We were giving away services in a lot of cases. And there's some finesse there. You don't want to turn your back on your customer. You need to take care of your customer. But as we went up market, our monthly contracts got a lot bigger. And we had a level of fearlessness. There was sometimes people were like, we can't take on that customer. I'm like, no, absolutely we can. We'll hire to it. We'll plan it correctly. And we are chasing big contracts now, and that's just the way it's going to be. So
that's great.
We redid all of our contracts. We had a lot of month-to-month customers. We went to 3-year contracts. We raised pricing, but we delivered a better service that the customers were willing to pay for. And we were winning a lot of business away from MSPs that weren't doing some of that stuff.
Was that the first acquisition Focus had ever done?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you might be right. There might have been a little bit of luck, perfect situation at the perfect time. But I also wonder, when you came on board, even though that wasn't an M&A, I mean, the integration of you bringing this different culture, everybody sort of had to go through that. So I think that integration, I'm wondering if that integration of you coming on board and sort of changing the culture helped you bringing a different team in as well.
I think so. This is going to sound weird, but I spent a lot of time staring at our org chart and just moving the chess pieces around on the board. And because I'm really big on it's all the people. Do you have the right people on board? Are they in the right seats doing the right stuff? And after we acquired NSK, I saw some people there that were kind of in the corner doing their thing. And I'm like, that person has a lot of talent.
Yeah.
And it's not being tapped. So you move some pieces, create some new boxes. It matches up with the go-to-market strategy. And then boom, you know, they start to flourish. It was a lot of work, don't get me wrong. And EMC was always big on development, retaining your employees and developing your employees. So I had a big development strategy too at Focus. Like, we need to develop our people and spend time on bringing these people along. And we grew so fast on the MSP side, I had to put some people into leadership roles that probably weren't ready. Mm-hmm. But talking with our management team, I'm like, we'll do this. We'll figure this out. We'll bring them along the right way because we know how to do it. I put a really strong management team in place around me, and that made all the difference.
Yep.
And I was telling some of the managers, I'm like, you're only as good as your team, and you should have all A players no matter what. Mm-hmm. Like, don't settle for C players. And there's a way to do it correctly without breaking things. And maybe some of these folks, we weren't on this like firing spree, but we were redeploying people into different roles that they were going to like better and be better at, promoting people that were chomping at the bit to get promoted. And it absolutely took off.
Yeah. When you write your book, I know one of the chapters is going to be, you know, don't settle for C players.
Yeah.
You know, there's only go after A players. Talk a little bit about that. You got to hire the best to be the best, that mentality that you have.
For sure. So I interviewed every single person we hired at Focus. So, you know, we went from, I think when I walked in the door, there was 18 people. We're now close to 90 people. I'm like, I'm going to meet every single person.
Regardless whether they were sales or whatever.
Everyone. Yeah. And it kind of drove the team crazy a little bit. It slowed things down. But I'm like, this is the number one thing we're going to do is hire. These folks are going to help us grow. They're the face of Focus. I had this mentality of everyone sells. Now, we didn't force it too hard, but, you know, we had a lot of resources that were really good talking to customers, and they're just behind a screen all day. And so our mission was like, get out in front of customers, get out in front of prospects, and everyone in the company is going to do that. And I encourage everyone to do that.
Yep.
You know, we drag people that, well, I'm not a pre-sales resource. Well, you are today because you know this software that we use, and you know this process that we use. You put it in place, so you're going to come talk about it. And that helped a lot. But on the hiring front, this is just going to sound so oversimplified, but there's a couple of people that were like, Doug, you really got to meet every single person. Like, what are you looking for? And I said, normalcy. And they're like, what? I'm like, person just first and foremost just needs to be normal.
Yeah.
There's ways to kind of see that. And, you know, my interviews weren't like hard interviews.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not like torturing people.
Right.
But they'd go two, sometimes 3 hours, really digging into what have you done in your career? Why does Focus look attractive to you? By the time they got to me, they had maybe met with 4 or 5 people. And some people would look at me and they'd say, and I learned this was something I learned at EMC. They would say, I've met with like 7 people. So you must have a doubt that I'm the right person. And I'm like, no, the exact opposite.
Right.
We want everyone that you're going to interact with to meet you. We want everybody nodding, saying, yes, we should hire this person. Because then when you come on board, no one wants to look like they made a hiring mistake. So everyone's going to line up and try to help you and make you successful. So we want you to meet everyone. So, you know, it worked. We hired some really good people, and it's a huge reason why we had the growth that we had.
Great.
Yeah.
So we've talked about this a little bit. Matter of fact, one of the reasons you're here this week is to help run one of the tracks that we're running here around sales. You and I hear it a lot from MSPs in the market. Sales is not a focus for enough MSPs. And matter of fact, it's almost a bad word, right? It's almost a bad word. Why do you think that is, and why were you so passionate? Obviously, you were a sales guy for so long, but why were you so confident that you knew you could come into a VAR business and really turn it around from a sales perspective?
Yeah, you know, as we got better and better at the MSP stuff, I started to participate in some MSP peer groups.
Yeah.
And what just struck me, kind of really had me scratch my head, was, you know, we'd go around the room, people would introduce themselves, and they would talk about their growth. Oh, we grew 6% last year. We grew 5% last year. And it got to me. And they would say, and we have no sales team. And they were proud of it.
Yeah.
Bragging about not having a sales team. So for me, that's just so I don't know. I was really struck by that. And I'm like, all right, these are founders that are technologists that probably got burned by a salesperson somewhere along the way and just don't like the word sales and think it's got a bad connotation. But they're all in the room bragging about having no sales team. And then it got to me and I'm like, we have 10 enterprise class salespeople and we grew 950% in 5 years. Like, why are you all bragging that you don't have Salesforce? So I found that odd. Mm-hmm. Now I know there's companies out there that are growing fast and they might not have a sales team the size of ours, but without that, there's no way we would have had the success that we had and that we're having.
I think too, the label of sales is maybe the issue because the MSPs that I hear that say they've grown without a sales team, they've got a sales team. They're internal, very focused, more strategic selling. They might be engineers that get pulled in at the point of sale, but you can't not have a sales, even the owner, right? The owner is typically, owner-led sales. That's how they're handling things. You know, you brought a different sort of strategy in place and said, I need to build a team, right? And was there a sales team when you started at Focus?
Yes.
And so what was the conversation you had with them to say, we're going to change this, right? Like how did that go?
Yeah. Not great.
Yeah.
And again, these are not not bad people.
Yeah.
I like them all, but they were lifestyle folks. Mm-hmm. They said, okay, if I sell X amount of revenue and gross profit, I'm going to make X amount of income and I'm happy with that.
Yep.
And that, and you know, I can have a good lifestyle and,
yep,
and not kill myself working yep too hard. And again, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I come in and I'm like, no, you know, we're going to double your quota. You're going to have to forecast. And they're just like, this isn't going to be fun. But that's the only way I know how to grow.
Yep.
You know, you got to set goals and you got to push people to hit those goals. And you got to aim high and think big. I was walking around and, you know, we started having company-wide kickoffs every year, quarterly updates on how the company's doing. And this was very foreign to the folks there. And we would always have a theme, you know, and my first theme was think big. I'm like, we got to think big. Like, why is everyone thinking so small? People were afraid, not afraid, but just hesitant to put a big number in front of a customer, whether it was a VAR sale or an MSP contract. Oh, they're never going to go for that because that's too expensive. And just EMC, like we were always 20 to 30% more expensive than everybody else, sometimes with lesser technology. And we would win because we'd show the value in working with EMC as a partner. So we took that same approach at Focus. And I really got out in front, and so did our management team, meeting with customers and showing some of the folks, like, watch how this goes, right? We're going to show the value. We're going to show the product that we're going to deliver. We're going to treat the customer extremely well. This is going to be an experience like they've never had before. And because of that, they're willing to pay for it. And then what we did see, again, I think timing had a lot to do with this. We were winning business away from a lot of smaller MSPs that weren't, you know, they were going in and having their strategic business reviews, talking about how many tickets they closed the last 30 days. And we were not doing that. We were road mapping, technology road mapping, trying to show the customer how you can use IT as a competitive advantage, speed up your process. And it was just a different approach. We completely rejiggered our quarterly reviews with our customers, because that was another problem with the reps, like, and some of our technologists. When was the last time you did a quarterly business review? Our customer doesn't want that. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
They might not know that they need it, and we need to go convince them and show them the value. We call it validating the value.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, do the business review, and if they refuse to take a meeting, let me know, and I'll call high in there and they'll tell them why they need to take the meeting. If they still won't take the meeting, send them the report, show them how it's different. And then we started doing those reviews. But to your point on MSPs that don't think they have a sales team.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's selling whether they realize it or not. I've heard MSPs talk through, well, we don't have a sales team, but we have customer success people. We have engineers and I'm like, you're all selling. You're all selling.
Yeah.
You know, my old boss at EMC used to say to me, everything in life is a sales call. Everything.
Sure is.
And that's the mentality that we took, and it worked.
That's great. So your story is pretty unique, Doug, because most MSP owners are their founders, right? You weren't that. You were someone that saw an opportunity, saw something that you wanted to go after, proved yourself very quickly, and were given an opportunity to take over, buy in, and then obviously lead the company forward. Can you talk about what that opportunity meant for you? And obviously, you know, the founder, the humility that he had to be able to say, I'm not the guy to get us to where I need to get us.
Yeah, he's a risk taker by heart. He loves rolling the dice. And, you know, as this acquisition landscape started to unfold, he kind of knew like, all right, I'm eventually going to want to sell Focus and I want the biggest bite of the apple that I can get. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably not the person that's going to do this. He was very close with the employees. I think in the back of his head, he's like, they're not really going to listen to me when I say we need to go do this stuff. So he hired me in as the VP of sales, like I said, and we started to have a lot of success. Now, if I had no success, it wouldn't have gone this way.
Sure.
So I went to him and I said, look, we got to continue to invest in the business. We really had very little EBITDA when I walked through the door, but no debt and a good foundation. And he's like, all right, go do your thing. So then as we started to have success, I kind of went to him and I'm like, I don't have any equity in the company.
Yeah.
I'm doing all the work. And what can we do here? And he stepped right up and he's like, here you go. And he gave me an employment contract. He gave me a management incentive plan where if we were to sell, you know, I would get X amount of the business. So then it's kind of interesting what we did. I have a lot of battle scars in this area to talk about, but we're having all the success. We integrated that MSP. But again, we didn't have a lot of big capital behind us to go do more acquisitions, which is what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And we were getting probably, honestly, 5 emails a day from, you know, this MSP roll-up strategy that was happening with private equity. Lots of people reaching out. We were interested in buying Focus. So we got together and said, all right, maybe now's the time to take on a private equity partner, sell the company, basically. Bruce would get his chunk. I'd get a little bit from the plan that we had in place. So we went out to market and we tried to do it on our own. Big mistake. I learned a lot, but we started to respond to some of these inquiries we were getting. And we got down the road, and without getting into too much detail, it was quite the process. We had a couple starts and stops. We got really close and it kind of fell apart at the end, not because of us, but the people that told us they had money didn't have money. It was just a weird thing. Yeah. So we put the brakes on that. And then we said, we still think this is a good time. So I said to Bruce, let's do this right. And we hired an M&A consultant to really take us out. And they packaged us up and took us out the right way. And that this process was just grueling. If we want to have another podcast to talk about this,
yeah.
I can.
Yep.
Thank God for Chris, because he had his finger on all of our data and we were very well organized. Mm-hmm. So if you're not and you're trying to do this, that's going to hurt. So we went out again. We got a lot of interest. We had 12 offers, narrowed it down, picked a couple, and then it was dragging out and kind of taking a long time. And towards the end, it just didn't feel right. So I went to Chris and I said, how do we buy Focus and give Bruce what he needs and do that? So we did that. So we did a majority recapitalization of the company that left me as the majority owner. Bruce got a good chunk of dough, took some chips off the table. We kept him in the company, so he still had minority ownership in Focus. I ended up as a majority owner. I was able to give Chris equity. So it was a good thing that we did, because we no longer had just one owner with no capital. We had some capital behind us. We were able to give out some ownership. And that's when I became the CEO majority owner.
That's great. So you talk a lot about Chris, and I got to know Chris. Chris was one of those rising stars, right? I mean, he had basically become your right-hand man over the years, and you trusted him with the finances and so much more. But at some point, Chris had the same conversation with you that you had with Bruce. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I've been at this 30 years, the last 8 at Focus. I'm kind of painting this like, oh, you just do this and you just do that and you're good. Yeah. It was a lot of hard work. So we continued to have success. But if you think about it, right, we had Bruce, who's a great owner, but didn't have a lot of capital around him to go make more acquisition. We transferred that to Doug, me. So again, good majority owner, no capital behind me. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at what's going on out there, and again, back to kind of the think big, like we want to be a big national MSP platform. Like that was the goal. But without the capital behind us, that was going to be hard because the quickest way to do it is through acquisition. We did two. The one that we did on the MSP side went so well. Mm-hmm. So I got with Chris. I'm like, I think we need a financial partner. But we didn't want to sell. So we did a second majority recapitalization. We took on some debt financing, gave up some equity along the way there. I was able to take a step back. I moved to the board of directors. I'm out of the day-to-day now. Chris is 10 years younger than me. And they always say, hire people that are smarter than you. And that's what I did, right? So yeah. Chris is like, you know, he was with us for 6 years. He was so ready to step into the role. I was ready to take a break. So we did that with a financial partner. We didn't sell the company. You know, the employees were nervous about that. The management team was nervous about that. The other thing, I really say this, people kind of look at me cross-eyed a little bit, but I think we threaded the needle with what we did. So we took on a capital partner that's great for us. Chris took on the role of CEO. And now we have this unbelievable management team. We're now able to give real equity in the company too. We created a management incentive plan for all of the employees to get a piece of the action. So we were able to spread that out. And yeah. Now everyone is really not just career-wise, but financially tied in to the future success of Focus. So we just had our first board meeting a couple weeks ago. We want to go make more acquisitions. We have a very strong financial partner behind us now that isn't the majority owner of Focus. And so we're not owned by private equity, but we have the ability to tap into it and we have some capital behind us. And that was better for our customers, all of our employees, rather than just getting acquired either by a strategic or a private equity that comes in and just changes everything. So yeah. It was a lot of hard work and we found the right partner. And I think things look great for the future.
That's fantastic, Doug. So,
and by the way, Bruce still has some equity. So he got two swings at the bat and still has a piece as well. So I still have ownership. Bruce still has ownership.
Great.
And we have this capital partner now, which is great.
I love, you know, owners, business leaders like yourself that obviously you want to take care of yourself, your families, you know, your management team's families. But to look at the rest of the team that you've built and say, we want these guys to have a piece of it. I mean, as a former employee of a very large MSP, that meant a lot to us when I knew, hey, if we do sell someday, I got a piece of this. So everything that I do on a daily basis, and not every MSP can do that, but you guys figured out a way to do that. And that's really special. So here's my question. What are you most proud of as your time as CEO at Focus?
This might sound a little self-serving, but I love doing things when people tell you you can't do them. So when I left EMC and I came to Focus, you know, I had a pretty strong network in New England. Mm-hmm. And I know for a fact people were snickering and kind of scratching their head like, Doug's lost his mind. What is he doing? This is never going to work. Mm-hmm. Some of the employees inside of Focus, the lifestyle people, were like, this is never going to work. We'll just wait out, Doug. I had customers of ours, good customers of ours, look right at me. I know what you're trying to do, Doug. You're not going to be able to do it.
Yep.
So I'm proud of the success. I'm proud of our ability to kind of fight through all that negativity. I had two, this was really interesting. So I knew two owners of local bars and services companies in the area pretty well that I considered friends, you know, from my dating. Mm-hmm. When I got to Focus within the first week, they both called me up. And threatened me. He said, look, one of them said to me, we're a lot bigger than you. And if you start to steal my talent, I'm going to put aside a huge pile of money and I'm going to drain your organization of all your good people. Wow. That's what he told me.
Wow.
This is a friend of mine.
Yeah.
I was like, listen, there's enough business to go around for everyone. I have no plans to do that. And thanks for the call.
Yeah.
But that was a huge motivator to me. Everyone's saying this isn't going to work. And there were moments where I thought it might not. We had a lot of lifestyle people starting to check out, kind of quitting on us. But our ability, and I told Bruce this, I'm like, Bruce, everyone that leaves, I'm going to replace with someone 10 times better. And I just had that belief that we were going to do that. And that's exactly what we did. So I'm proud of the success. I'm proud of our people. I'm proud of people believing in what we set out to accomplish. Now, everything isn't all roses. Like, we're not perfect. We've still got lots of warts and lots of challenges that we still need to work through. But there's nothing like, you know, looking up at the numbers. You know, we went from, you know, 18 people maybe doing 18 million. And now we're, you know, our best year, we were close to 60 million. We're almost 90 employees now.
Wow.
We've got a great capital partner behind us. We've made a couple acquisitions. We started winning some real nice awards along the way. We got named a Fast 50 by Boston Business Journal, fastest growing companies in Boston. Got put on the Inc. 5000. We've won Boston Business Journal Best Places to Work, which is another thing I'm hugely proud of. In 2020, we were number one in Best Places to Work in Boston. So that told me that the cultural change that we made worked, and people really enjoyed working at Focus, because that's an anonymous survey of our employees and how they like working at Focus.
Yep.
And we came out number one in that. So those awards, those accolades, you know, it's all good stuff that kind of validates that you did the right thing.
Yeah.
I also had someone at EMC tell me, don't forget, yesterday's steak is today's shit. So you got to keep going and never be comfortable and satisfied.
You have so many feel good moments. Obviously, I know there were some rough times, and you don't seem, I know you said that I'm sure there was moments in your past where there was some self-doubt and, man, am I doing the right thing? But we always like to ask this. I know you probably led into this a little bit, but when was the moment that you realized this was it? Number one, that you chose the right career to begin with, that you made the right decision. Like, how did you know that this is it?
I think after we made that MSP acquisition, and like, I love being in front of customers. We had so many customers to go talk to, and, you know, we would get excited when we signed a $3,000 a month MSP contract, and we closed one for $80,000 a month. And that's when I was like, this, and it's working very, very well. And then just having all the people around me that I hired in, I could name them all, but they probably don't want me to name them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we put a lot of structure in place, and just looking at everybody so dialed in was kind of the moment. Like, I'm like, all right, this all worked. You know, the people that were just kind of flipped the switch and said, all right, we're going to dig in here and work hard. And just watching the numbers go up has been great. You know, we're at a little bit of an inflection point right now. So our product business is flat. MSP keeps growing like crazy. It's the best, fastest growing, most profitable part of our business. And it has been now for the last 3 to 4 years.
Awesome.
And that product business, we still like it. There's still a lot of product being bought out there. It helps us win MSP business, because we get a lot of, why are you guys still in the VAR business? But I can't tell you how many times, because we have people that know Dell EMC and Cisco and cloud-based technologies, and we get into an account doing that first, and then we're like, by the way, we can manage all of this for you.
Awesome.
And that's just gone extremely well and helped us get much larger contracts having that VAR business. And then obviously I got to plug Enable. So we were with another partner at the time that had got acquired, and we were a pretty big customer of theirs, and they just kind of went dark on us. And I don't think it was any individual's fault. It was just kind of circumstances. And we put a 12-month process together to pick our next vendor in this space. This is worth telling this story.
Okay. So,
you know, we're based in Boston. You guys are headquartered in Burlington. So Enable was on the list to go look at. So I sent the technology team out to Burlington to get a demo of the product. And they come back and they're like, yeah, no, we're not going with that. I was like, why? And, you know, they start telling me the technical reasons going over my head. And I'm like, so I called Ahmed, who, you know, who's our VP of Managed Services. I'm like, Ahmed, you're going back. And Chris and I went out and we met with John and Chris at your headquarters in Burlington. And the relations, we could just tell, like, they're right down the street. These are good guys. The technology we know is going to work, and we're going to get really well taken care of. So I came back to the office after that meeting. I'm like, these are great guys. They want our business. I sent the tech team back in there and I asked Enable, can you do a much more detailed deep dive into the product? And of course they come back and like, this is the greatest stuff ever. So that's where our relationship started.
Yep.
And we took a long time kind of moving everyone, all of our customers off and onto Enable, and it worked phenomenally well. And we continue to grow with you guys, and the relationship's been super strong. And it's, I would say it's the best partnership we have with our vendors right now.
Wow. Thanks, Doug. Really, really appreciate you. Obviously your support and you being a customer, and it shows the type of people that you've hired though, because every one of your leadership team that I've come into, I feel like I'm friends with. I mean, you build that relationship. You're obviously a big relationship selling guy, and it's just something about having those relationships with your vendors, and this is a community. So really appreciate you being part of this week here, and you're going to help a lot of MSPs out. We could do a 3-hour podcast about your story, but hopefully this was valuable to a lot of folks. I think you got a lot of great stories there. So let me ask you, Doug, what's next for you? You've taken a step back out of the CEO role. You're still on the board. You're still very much involved with the focus team. Saw you at dinner the other night. What's next for you?
Yeah, so I wanted to take a legitimate break in the action. Yeah. I've been grinding for 30 years, and I was, you know, admittedly feeling a little burnt out. So mm-hmm. I took a step back, and then my phone started ringing. And I'm helping right now some private equities look at MSPs that they're thinking of acquiring. Mm-hmm. And then I'm working with some MSPs directly as a consultant to really look at their go-to-market strategy. So if anybody's out there, you can find me on LinkedIn,
yep.
Doug Alexander. You know, small engagements where I just have a knack. You know, in my career, by the way, when as a manager, I was always given the district that was struggling, the team that was struggling. You know, we need to go turn this group around. For some reason, I just had a knack for doing that. So I can quickly look at an MSP model, the service offering, the people that they have, you know, interview the teams, understand the sales strategy, and kind of give some strong recommendations on what they need to do. So that kind of has just happened organically. My phone's been ringing. I've been doing some of that, of course, without breaching any contract inside of Focus for non-compete, non-solicitation.
Sure.
But that's going pretty well. So, okay. And I enjoy that. Like, that's what I really like doing because it's very natural to me. Mm-hmm. And I love seeing the success of the result of it and that accomplishment that I talked about earlier. I think there's a little bit of a myth out there that like this is going to be so hard to do. Just get started, and it's easier than you think. It's not easy, but it's easier than you might think.
That's great, Doug. You're going to be very successful doing this for the next X number of years until you're ready for the next exciting venture. I wish you the best of luck. I want to really personally thank you. This had been when we started this podcast about a year and a half ago. I always wanted to get you on just because you're number one, you have such great experience, such a good message, but mainly because you're just such a good guy. And so I really appreciate you being here. Enjoy the rest of your week here at Empower, and thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.